Tea Time, Midlife Edition. It's not a coffee break. It's tea time. Slow down. Relax. It's your turn. Welcome, 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 welcome. Turn the tea kettle on. Pick your favorite tea. Grab your favorite teacup. Let it steep. Add what you will. Find a cozy spot. It's tea time. Midlife edition. Welcome to Tea Time Midlife Edition. I'm your host, Regina Young, and today's guest is Dr. Carol Parker Walsh. How are you, Dr. Carol?
I'm doing amazing.
I'm so glad this time worked out, and I'm so glad to be with you today.
I am too. This is so awesome. I mean, I'm glad too. It's bright, it's sunny, it's Monday. It's just a perfect time.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of partly cloudy, but it's a beautiful day.
Just yes.
Absolutely. Yes. So before we get started, what kind of tea are you drinking?
I am drinking my favorite, which is chai tea. I'm having a chai tea latte with almond milk.
Okay. Oh, well, that's really good. I love chai. It's spices, I think.
Totally. And I don't drink coffee, so it has enough caffeine, but still, you know, so it gives me a little bit of an edge, but I love the spices, and you know, it just kind of wakes me up. It wakes my palate up. It wakes me up.
Absolutely. I love it. Well, today I'm drinking is fennel tea. And fennel tea is great for sometimes if you have an upset tummy, but it's really known for antiviral, anti-inflammatory, and anti-fungi. Check with your herbalist and doctor, make sure it fits in your health regimen. Absolutely. Very delicious, you know, mild, not really any caffeine in it as well.
Okay. Nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
So talking about Dr. Carol Parker Walsh I just want to give you a little bit of her background. Dr. Carol Parker Walsh is an executive and leadership coach, helping her clients showcase their brilliance by designing an epic career and a life that matters. She also is an award-winning certified career and personal brand strategist, life and executive coach, a TED Talk presenter, three-time Amazon best-selling author, keynote speaker, and the host of the podcast, Midlife Career Rebel. Well, that's a mouthful. Welcome once again. But today's topic is unapologetically you in midlife. So we're going to dive right in. This is like your area. No kidding. So, yes. So just, if you could just tell us just a little bit about yourself. I know I read the bio, but let us behind the curtain. Let's see what's going on. Yes.
Absolutely. No, So a lot of the work that I do, or all the work I do, really stems from really my own experiences and not having the type of support or someone who even talked about being unapologetically who they are at midlife when I was, you know, kind of entering that realm in my, you know, mid to late 40s. And so I had a career as a labor and employment attorney. I specialized in employment discrimination litigation. I did that in Chicago, and I'm actually in the Northwest. And I have stayed pretty much in that employment space. I was an HR director. I've been an organizational consultant with some major healthcare institutions doing training development, leadership development, and all that for a lot of years. Before I went back to school, I got my doctorate, moved into academia, started teaching, leadership and leadership management. And then stepped into academic leadership myself as an associate dean and directing graduate programs and all of that. Let me just get a little bit of my tea. And it wasn't until, you know, I was on that rat race, you know, kind of building my career, doing what we do, you know, in a lot of ways, just running on autopilot and just following that pre pre-described script that we have, looking at opportunities, taking people's advice. And I went through my kind of first iteration of like kind of a wake up was when I went through a divorce. And then I was in a near fatal car accident, which was a big wake up for me. Wow. In terms of really looking at what was important for me, what I wanted to do with my life. And it was that experience that really was a catalyst for me deciding that I didn't want to just, you know, work or study this issue or talk about this issue, but actually support women after I went through the process myself of really helping them to break free from, you know, the societal ideas of what we should be and how we should show up, to actually showing up unapologetically the way we were designed to be, and to do and unleash the brilliance within. Because we're all, in my opinion, I believe we were put here for a reason and a purpose, and just to understand what that is. Absolutely. And for you to step into that in a way that makes the best sense for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it really is when one has a moment to reflect from some kind of incident or something that has life going one way, and then it takes a left, and you have a choice to stay on that path or take a left, and you know, it's like a T in the road. And I really find that to be the most transformative time, and you discover who you really are versus who you thought you were. So
yeah, absolutely. You know, and I remember in that experience, I was on a 2-lane road, and the options to the left and right of me were not optimal, right? It was either off the side of the road, you know, with this drunk driver coming at me, or into oncoming traffic. And, you know, I heard this voice that said, turn now. And I'm thinking, turn where? But, you know, I made a decision and I made a turn. And while I got hit and hurt and was in the wheelchair for 6 months and a lot of reflective time, you know, I was still hit, but I survived. And I think that's so metaphorically true of when we get to these forks in a road, the options don't always look, it's not usually like, oh, this is perfect and this isn't. Usually both options are like, yeah, that's just how life is. It doesn't like tie something up in a beautiful bow and ribbon and say, this is the path you should go. And have something dark and ominous so that it's clear that that's not where you should go. I think that's what happens with most decisions in life, is that either one, we don't know which one is the best one. And even if we do make the right decision for ourselves, there could still be a little impact, right? But
fair,
you kind of pick up and you survive and you keep going and you move forward. So in a lot of ways, that accident for me was so metaphorical to, it's not about making the perfect decision. It's not about making somebody else's decision. It's about just making the right decision for yourself in the moment and just riding that and see what comes out of that. Because guess what? Down the road, you can make another decision. You know,
I really get the world of that, because I feel like there is no wrong decisions. There's no accidents.
I believe that too.
No accidents in the world. Absolutely. Yep. You know, it kind of has me think about in midlife, you know, without all these titles and this, you know, like my job title, my relationship status, or my family position, like, who are you? Because, you know, before the accident, you probably were one thing. And then after the accident, you were something else. And it probably felt a little bankrupt who you were.
That's very fair to say. And I think that is a big, particularly at midlife, because, and it's funny because in my doctoral studies, that's what I focused on, was identity development, particularly at the intersection of like race and gender. And then of course, now we're introducing age, you know, to that. But, you know, this idea of who we are for so much of our lives, we're told to create our professional identity. And we lean so much into creating that identity, you know, to the point that wherever you go to meet, whenever you meet someone new, they're like, what's your name? And what do you do? Like, those are always the two questions. So it's not like who you are. Sure. It's like, what do you do? So we spend so much time developing that professional identity that when we take a moment and ask ourselves, who am I? What do I want to do? We often don't know the answer because we've spent no time really asking ourselves or exploring the answer to that. We've just been following this kind of, as I said before, this preset, you know, road that we should go on. So there truly is an identity crisis at the midlife pivot, right? It is this unraveling of this professional identity and the emergence of who you really are, and reconnecting to who that woman, and I work primarily with women, but who that woman is now, not who she was at 20, not who she was before she got married or before she had kids or before she entered that career, but who am I today? And who do I want to show up as and be? And to me, that's the most powerful work, to be able to get on the path of stepping into living your life unapologetically, because it has to come from this internal, intrinsic place of inspiration and motivation, and not from this external idea of who we should be, or the titles we should have, or the positions we should be in, and all of that kind of craziness. I mean, when I stopped practicing law, and it's been 20 years, I practiced for 10, and I haven't practiced for 20. And when I tell certain people, oh yeah, I used to be a lawyer, they say, well, why did you stop? Like, I had no other options in life. Like, well, you're a lawyer, you should have stayed one until you died. It's like what they're pretty much saying. Like, there's no other options in life. But that's how sometimes we get into these thought processes and believe, well, I'm a lawyer, therefore I can't do anything else. And if I believe that I was a lawyer and not I was Carol who was practicing law, then I would be limited about what was possible and available for me in my life. And I think that happens to so many of us.
Yeah, I really get that, because I used to model in New York for top agency, and that's all they thought I could be. But I knew that I had a background and I had a mind, and I'm great at computers, and I'm great at working with executive level, you know, people. And so I was able to literally go to the front office from, you know, because I knew my ability, and it wasn't limited to, do I look good? You know?
Yes. So. That is so powerful. And that is what is so key, is that you have to understand what you're capable and possible of doing. Like, people can never see beyond their own limitations. So if they can't see you beyond what you're doing, they'll try to keep that lid on top of you to keep doing that thing, and will try to discourage you from doing other things because that's how they see you, or that's the limitations of their thinking about you. And that's why it's so important to have that internal wisdom and knowing that, no, wait a minute, I practice law, but I'm not a lawyer. Like, I'm so much
more.
That's
not who I am.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's so nuanced and so, it's like a fine difference, but it's such a powerful difference.
Now, you were talking about the societal limitations in midlife. Should we still be playing by those rules?
Oh, hell no. No, you know, it's funny because, like, we had a conversation about, you know, this thing that I think happens in midlife is that sometimes you hear this, what's the saying, like, youth is wasted on the young, right? It's like, if I knew now what I knew then, oh my God, right? I'd be unstoppable.
Yes.
but to your earlier point, I don't believe in accidents or mistakes. And I believe everything I went through in my life is why I'm in a position today to not follow those rules and to say, screw you, I'm going to create my own rules. I'm going to create my own destiny, because what's possible for me, no one knows yet. That's the beautiful thing about it. Like, anything is possible for me if I allow myself to believe it and see it as a possibility, right? It doesn't have to go after it necessarily, but why would I limit my future based on my past? Right. Fair. And so many of us do that. We think, well, I've done that, therefore that's all I can do. But I'm like, back then you didn't know you could do that. And so now, like, who knows what's possible for you? So it's so limiting when, you know, if we fall into societal ideas of where we should go and what we should do, and particularly societal ideas around women, women of color, women of a certain age, there's so limiting. Oh my God. We would, you know, if we followed their path, we would just be at home knitting and, you know, taking care of our grandkids if we had to.
That's funny. And it's very sad, because I definitely find society stuck in some 1950s sitcom or something. I have no idea.
Yes.
Especially around advertising or anything else. But what about the belonging and fitting in trap? Because I get that is a trap that we were taught very young to play and yeah. not getting that it is a, it's like having our hands cuffed. We didn't yeah. know it.
Yeah, completely. And that's exactly what my TEDx talk was about, fit versus belonging, in that, you know, we're pack animals by nature. I mean, we are designed to be in community with other people. So of course we want to be accepted and not put out of the village, right? So this idea of wanting to fit in, again, comes from this idea of external validation and external pleasing. Like, if you like me, if yes. you find me acceptable, then I feel, then I therefore must be acceptable. So how can I change myself or stop laughing the way I laugh or showing up the way I show up so that you can find me acceptable? But what I believe so strongly is that instead of finding, and I feel like the younger generation have this down, and I think that's something that we could borrow from them, is that they create yes. communities, right? They create places or find places where they can fully, they can show up fully as who they are, as opposed to trying to take away pieces of ourselves and try to fit in places that can't accept us fully as we are. And sometimes I get this pushback, like in organizations, like, well, I'm in an organization. Don't I need to fit into the organization? And I'm, you know, well, really think about it for a moment. How different are you from the organization? Like what's your initial belief that you can't be fully present in that space? Right. And these are probably some preconceived ideas and preconceived notions that may not be true, that you can't show up fully as you are in the organization. Right. And so particularly as Black women, we've been taught this code shifting, this idea that, you know, we can be this yes. way at home, but when we show up in the workplace, that we can only be a certain way. And that's buying into this idea that we have to then fit to belong, as opposed to saying, no, listen, you've said that this organization is a place that values differences and values diversity. Let me show you what that looks like. And so I'm going to show up fully present as myself, and then maybe challenge you to find your ways of understanding me, as opposed to having me change who I am so that you can, you know, feel comfortable with me.
Wow, that is so powerful. When you say it that way, that yes, that's the big thing. It's all about diversity in the workplace. We accept everybody, but once you have a different opinion, not so much.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And that really challenges whether or not the organization wants difference based on physical and visual appearance, or do they really want diversity and a plurality of thinking and the way that we are? And to me, a diverse organization is where we welcome the conversation of, you're operating in a way that I'm not used to. Let me figure out how I can be adaptive to what I'm experiencing versus having you try to fit into something that I am. There's a story that I heard years ago that I think is so powerful that really kind of encapsulates this. And it was written by an author, R. Roosevelt Thomas. And he talked about the story of a giraffe and an elephant. And he talked about how the giraffe built this beautiful house and his buddy, the elephant, he wanted to invite over, but the elephant couldn't fit in the door and he was breaking everything that moved, you know, because every time he turned around, things were built under, you know, for the giraffe and through the giraffe specification. But the elephant, even though the giraffe welcomed him in, couldn't find a space where he could really be comfortable. And he was kind of breaking everything through that design. And the moral of the story is, while you may want diversity and invited, if the house isn't built to encompass all the other animals of the kingdom, if you will, to allow them to fit in, right, and belong into the place, then it's really not a house of diversity. And I think that's what happens in so many organizations, is the house is built for the giraffe and they're like, everyone's welcome, but people can't find, they're not feeling like they belong, right? Because it's not a house that's really built and designed to allow them to be fully present as who they are.
Yeah. And that kind of, I think it falls under the umbrella of being in a safe space, and it feels yes. like it's not, they say it's a safe space, and unless you have a really diverse and inclusive environment, it may not be
right. Right.
Yeah.
It's not built for belonging, right? And so part of the story, it talks about that as the elephant is tearing up this giraffe's house, the giraffe tells the elephant, you know, well, maybe I should send you to ballet lessons, or maybe you should lose weight, or maybe, you know, it's coming up with all these ideas of how the elephant could change. But the elephant tells the giraffe, it's not me that needs to change. It's the house that needs to change. Right. And so I think that is where the conversation happens, is that it's how do we create this pluralistic environment where people belong, as opposed to trying to make me lose weight or take ballet lessons or all this stuff so I could fit. Right. Into what you've built, as opposed to creating a space of belonging. And I love that story because I think it's such a metaphoric way to understand, like, you know, we need to stop on our end. We to be unapologetic. We have to stop taking the ballet lessons, stop trying to change who we are so that we could fit, as opposed to embracing all of who we are and finding those places where we belong.
Absolutely. So how do you find a safe space for yourself where you can be yourself, especially for women of color, like you were saying? Yeah, it's just a real thing.
I mean, the easiest way to do that, the first thing you have to do is just really know who you are and having a confidence in who you are. Right. Because if you don't have that as the foundation, it's really easy to get into other places and then, you know, not feel safe or not feel like something's wrong with you, right? Because what happens is we start internalizing other people's idea of us, and then we think something's wrong with us. So you've got to first and foremost, like, have the secure belief and confidence in who you are, so that when you are met with someone else's opinions or thoughts around how you're showing up, you can invite them to reconsider their own thinking, as opposed to internalizing their way of thinking within yourself, right? So that's the first thing. And to me, you know, when I'm in places and spaces and people ask me interesting questions that seem to be challenging their comfort level with my showing up the way I am, my first thing is to always ask them, or to come from a place of curiosity and to just inquire why they think that. Like, really, why are you questioning that? Like, what's going on with you, right? Is to really put it back on them to engage the thinking and to engage where they are, as opposed to me having to take that in and to then think I need to readjust something within myself, right?
I really understand that because I am like 5'11", 6 feet. So I come across, could be intimidating or friendly, loving, and open like I am. And that's over there by you, because by me, I'm coming in open, available, and curious about you. So
exactly. So if I see you and I'm intimidated, that has nothing to do with you. That has everything to do with what's going on in my head and in my mind about you. And that's what I'm saying. We need to invite people to explore their own thoughts and feelings, as opposed to then now you coming in at 6 foot, hunched over, trying to play small, overly accommodating, so that you can try to help them. Right. And you don't even know if that's going to work. That's the thing. Like, we try to do these things and that still may not work. So now what are you going to do? Right. So that's what I mean. We can't change other people. We can only control ourselves. And for me, that's fundamentally what I'm trying to say, is that, you know, the only person you have control over is yourself. You have no idea why or where someone else is coming from. And to try to adjust yourself to accommodate something you don't even know is really not helpful for either one of you.
That is fair to say. So that's like in midlife, this is a perfect time to give yourself permission to claim your space and your place, like to be able to show up unapologetically. Yes. Really?
Yeah, completely. Particularly now, because, you know, one of the things that I study, when you look at the lifespan, you know, human development through along the lifespan, when you get to midlife, you're no longer, you know, while you're still looking forward and the things that you can do, unlike when you're in your 20s and 30s, where it was all about building and creating, at this stage in our lives, we're looking back at what's the legacy that I'm leaving. And so this is the perfect time to really understand who we are, you know, in this middle, right? Between raising children, aging parents, between our old self and our profession and a career and our new selves, who we want to step into in the next iteration of our life. So we are literally in the middle trying to reconstruct and refigure, you know, who we are. And so this is the perfect time to decide who that person is now, you know, with all these experiences that we've had, and who are we trying to become in terms of the legacy that we want to leave behind as well. So this is the perfect time to be able to do that. And why this is so important that we break free from society. Now, as I say that, I also want to be very clear that as women and women of color, we have a societal kind of legacy that's also impacting sometimes our ability to do that, our ability to feel safe, because, you know, from a historical perspective, showing up big was dangerous. Like, it was life-threatening, you know? So we have that at play in our DNA. You know, as women generally, we weren't taught to be at the middle or the center or the front of, right? We were, you know, society teaches women to basically be handmaidens, you know, for men. So we're undoing a lot of DNA legacy as well as societal messaging that still is coming at us that we have to really take in to step into ourselves unapologetically. So while I'm saying it sounds easy, oh, know yourself and show up, we're really unraveling and deconstructing a lot of old narratives and old stories and old belief systems that have been embedded and fed to us for centuries in order to come into that space. So I don't want to make it seem like, oh, I'm going to be unapologetic today and show up. It does take work. It takes commitment and it takes work and a daily decision that today I'm going to show up in unapologetic ways. Like when I go to that meeting, I am going to speak up at that meeting, right? You know, I'm not going to have someone talk over me. Or if something's not working at a restaurant, I am going to make a comment and say, this isn't working for me. Could you please send it back and give me something different, right? Or if you need to speak to a manager, like, so every day in every space, you're making these decisions to say, no, I'm going to be me. I'm going to show up as me. And that is a process that we go through during this time of our lives.
That is really great. And it really sounds like, you know, granting yourself permission to just be. Just be.
Yes.
You don't have to explain that. Just be.
Yes. Yeah.
The other thing is I want to ask, do you think that it's a good thing for a woman in midlife to get some kind of training of some sort? Because, you know, I feel like what I've learned so far got me this far. And I'm not clear I have all the tools to go forward. So I believe in self-development, leadership programs, and things to that nature. But do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I agree with that. I love, you know, Maya Angelou had some quote that talked about when you know better, you do better, right? And so I have, like you said, what got me here, you know, was enough of what has to get me to the next level. You know, I'm going to learn more so I could be better and step into better. So I am a huge advocate of professional and personal development. I think hiring a coach, you know, and you don't have to hire one coach and that be the one that you work with forever. There's so many different schools of thoughts and ways in which you can grow. I hire a new coach annually because I love to get a different perspective. I love to connect to someone else and hear, you know, their philosophy or what they're sharing, because I get to not to follow exactly what their path or their method, but to gain more knowledge so that I can make better decisions for myself. I am a big advocate of therapy. If you need to like engage with a therapist and have someone to talk to about your ideas and to get things out, to be in community. Women, in my opinion, thrive in community. So being parts of community of other women who are on that path as well to support you and uplift you as you go along. Yeah, you know, we should not be doing this in isolation. Isolation is the thing that keeps us trapped in those limited ways of thinking. You know, this society is designed to be very individualistic and try to separate the herd, if you will, to keep you out and keep you alone. When you're in community and connecting with other people or getting that support, absolutely. You know, and I know some women, like, we get this idea that asking for help means I'm weak or I don't have it all together, or it says something deficient about me. But I think the smartest, most savviest women in the world, I mean, Oprah worked with Martha Beck. I mean, Serena has a coach, you know, Simone Biles had a coach, like all these, you know, these people are not doing this in the game, and they're always up leveling, right? You know, they're not in the game by themselves. They always have support. They always have a village. So I think the best possible thing you could do if you're at that place and hearing that whisper or inkling is to connect with someone or connect with a group of women who can help you at the next iteration of your journey.
Absolutely. Being, like you were saying, isolated and alone, that's actually one of the reasons why Tea Time Midlife Edition came into play is because I thought it's a way to, you know, over a cup of tea, have teacup conversations and create a community. You can invite ladies over and you can have a whole community and a whole discussion about what's you going through at this point in life. Support. Find out what resources they're using that's working for a menopause or foggy thinking or any of that stuff, you know, and or what doctor they're using, whatever that is. So it's everything you want and for yourself and your life is in community.
I love it. I love it. That is so true. You are, and unless you know you're not alone, which most of us think, oh, I'm the only one going through something, which, you know, then you talk to five other women and you're like, oh, thank God, it's not just me.
That is fair to say. Well, so what do you think about ageism and racism, you know, in midlife? Because there is in the workplace and other spaces, that's kind of a thing that we're dealing with. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that is a big thing. There's a lot of myths and assumptions about women generally, but definitely women of a certain age. And, you know, I think that fundamentally, you're just as old as you believe you are, right? And so I think this is why it's important for us to stay up to date, to continue to grow in our own self-knowledge, to really commit to what it is that we have to offer and bring to the table so that we know how to articulate our own value and all the experience that we bring to the table, as opposed to thinking that, well, I'm too old for this, or it's past my time, or let me pass the baton over to, you know, my kids and the next generation, and kind of buy into that whole story that we're not ready or equipped, or somebody's not going to hire us at our age, or all of those type of things, right? If we believe all that myth, then of course we're going to show up in that space. So yes, ageism exists and racism does exist, but I also think how we think about how we show up with those as limitations on ourselves, we have to really watch that. Well, you see what I'm saying? So while it exists, we don't have to show up like it does exist. Like, just know your brilliance and know what you bring to the table. Listen, the beautiful thing about you being the age you are now is that you bring a wealth of experience. Right. And not only in terms of your education, your skills and your experience, but also the unique natural gifts and talents that you have honed and developed over the years. The life experience of, say, you've gone through a divorce, the resiliency, the adaptability, your experience of being able to go from managing a household with this amount of income to a budget of this amount of income are all translatable skills in terms of what you can offer into an organization or offer to a company. You know, the fact that you've raised two or three children, you know, shows how you can manage a team, because basically employees are like children, let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Right. So we have to start thinking of all of what we bring to the table through the experience of our age, right? And through the experiences that we've had as women of color, that really can be translated into operable. Is that a word?
Yeah. Operational.
Yes. Skill sets that we can bring to the table. So yes, ageism and racism absolutely exist. But what is so much more powerful is that if you don't see it as a limitation, it won't become one for you, if that makes sense. If you show up and you're like, listen, here's what I bring to the table. Here's what I could do for you at the bottom line. Here's all the wealth and depth that I have that someone who's half my age does not have. And here's how I can make a contribution. Coming from that space is coming from a position of power, as opposed to coming from a position of, yes, well, I know I'm this age and I know I haven't done X, Y, Z, you know, please, you know, overlook that kind of thing. So a lot of the stuff is how we really think about it and how we allow it to impact us, as opposed to allowing it to impact our ability to go after the things that we want.
Absolutely. It's like owning your personal power. in the face of all that.
So, in the face of, right, because it's there and it exists. So either we can let it override and take us over, or we can understand that it's there and figure out how to step up and rise above it.
I just want to know, if a woman was just going through this journey right now, what would be a suggestion you would give her, to like an action she could take for after, even after just this call?
Oh, I love it. Well, you know, I definitely would subscribe to your podcast for sure. I mean, just hearing, being able to hear other, you know, voices and opinions and experiences will be so eye-opening and refreshing for you. I love, it's such a great question. I love reading. I love Brené Brown's book, The Gift of Imperfection. I think listening to my, if you're a career minded, I think listening to my podcast, The Midlife Career Rebel.
Absolutely.
Give you a whole different perspective of breaking free from the career matrix and designing a career and life you love. You know, and so just connect yourself to something other than maybe what's been you, that's been in your sphere, in your circle, and connect to something new so that it can open and expand you up to something completely more. And I invite people to also join me in my program, Fearless, the Career Rebel Academy, so that, you know, you can become fearless and unapologetic and unstoppable and going after what you want to do and have in your life.
What is the website so people can get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can go straight to my website. It's my name. It's you put this in front of it. It's www.carolparkerwalsh.com. And you can find a plethora of resources and my podcast and the program and so much more.
Wow. Thank you so much, Dr. Carol. This has been a lovely conversation. And I look forward to, you know, finding out other things that you're up to and getting back with you. So thank you again, and look forward to, you know, talking. And I think I'm going to follow up on the coaching thing. I love that thought, because, you know, you get as far as you got, but the key is to find a coach. And yes. So, yeah, I appreciate your time. And this has been Tea Time Midlife Edition. Cheers.
It's Tea Time Midlife Edition.